people with many ideas about politics and society. They do rally around the central goals of lowering taxes and lessening big government. Joining me now.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at His command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole.
May 23rd.
Keep you close to the Lord.
Washington, D.C. United States of America,
for
planet Earth.
So cold.
Third planet
you
from the sun.
Help me keep the devil.
I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones.
Way down in the hole.
Call in number
in the hole.
347-884-8500. Yeah.
Down in the hole.
You gotta help me keep the devil
down in the hole.
Down in the hole. All right. That was one of my favorites. Tom Waits. Gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Made famous by Tom, but made even more famous by the HBO series The Wire. I thought about it earlier today when I thought about what the show topic was going to be about. I don't usually do a show topic in advance of the day. I usually try to see what the news cycle is going to be about and talk about the current events of the particular day the show is going to air. But I thought about a show that I'm interested in. Some things that I'm really interested in that I'd really like to share with some of the people who listen to the show. We have reached our 16,000th listen to show, and I believe that's a milestone considering where I started, where I haven't been anyone listening at all for quite a while. I'm really appreciative of all the people who have taken the time to listen to the show and come into the chat rooms and download the show. 16,000 for me is just really great. I remember how elated I was to have 1,000 downloads when I was at like 500 listens. I thought that was really great, but wow, 16,000 is quite a lot. I really do appreciate everything. Hey, I have a co-host on tonight with me, Cool Mike, very popular co-host guy. He should really get himself an agent because he is a co-host that every show he's on, it turns to gold in terms of listens and downloads, and I'm not sure what's going on with that, but the guy is magic when it comes to drawing people into shows. He's in much demand, and there are actually folks out there who are jealous, like jealous, jilted folk when he's not when he doesn't make an appearance on their show because he's just so important to their shows. Cool Mike, you're on the air with us. Hey, how's it going? How's your week so far?
Good. Great. Congratulations. 16,000 is, well, I'd like to accomplish that someday. Good for you, Doc Jones. And, you know, it's, I think that's a tribute to, you don't change, I think some shows change when they don't see the numbers of what they're doing. You mentioned a lot of times there were no listeners, at least, and nobody in the chat room, but you stayed focused. And I think that's clear when you stay focused and you continue however the mission is, and it eventually picks up. And that's great. 16,000. Congratulations. And it's great to have you in the Conservative Alliance as well.
Indeed. I'm happy. Go on.
Yeah. I have a question or a comment. I invited some ladies to call tonight from California. Mm-hmm. And they're going to they have a show. Their show is probably almost right at where your show was when you actually open. And okay. I was explaining to them about some of the shows that had those road bumps. So they're going to call in and introduce themselves, and I think they're suspicious of me. I think they think, why would this guy want to help me? And so I told them, I said, well, you're a retired Marine. You know they can ask you any questions. But, you know, I think they just need a little schooling that I think you can kind of point them in some right directions. So hopefully they'll call in. They are the Omamas, Michelle.
Oh.
And one is a Democrat, one is a Republican, and they talk about issues from a mom's standpoint.
I see.
It's a pretty good show. I mean,
yeah.
It's not the C. Robert Jones Report, but I have to ask you a quick question because we didn't see you last week. What did you think about Benjamin Netanyahu's response to your buddy Barack Obama?
Hey, I tell you what, it was classic, you know. And I, you know, after listening to, or rather watching him lecture Obama, I didn't think that it was as bad as the news media is making it out to be, as if he talked down to Obama and lectured him and, you know, waggled his finger and gave him a lesson in Israeli history. It didn't come across to me that way, but certainly came across to a lot of other people as if Obama was being talked down to and as if he was being lectured and spoken to as if he were a child. And quite frankly, I'm pleased with that. I'm very pleased with that perception, because Obama's a very arrogant man, and he thinks that he knows. I get the impression that he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, but it's probably only the case if he's in the room by. Very pleased with the fact that Netanyahu spelled it out for him in the proper fashion, and then I waited for the conference for Obama's appearance at the Jewish conference. I forget the name of it. What is it called? What was it called this Saturday?
I don't remember.
Yeah, and Obama kind of walked it back a little bit, and he didn't because earlier that day, just before the conference, it was said that by Fox News and other news outlets that Obama was not going to change his stance on the issue, and that he was going to most likely repeat verbatim what he said the previous 2 days, and he didn't do that. He pretty much backpedaled, and I expected that from him.
Well, I thought Mr. Netanyahu held firm but showed amazing respect. He repeated 3 or 4 times were sentences of respect for the president's presidential office, despite disagreeing. But I did like the fact he said, realistically, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. AMC vet says it's APAC, and I should have remembered that. But go on. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I think I think he, even if we had Maxine Waters on your show, and we would argue, we would still show respect for the office, and I think he did that. You know, we wouldn't be calling her swearing at her or using profanity and I think he did that. I think Mr. Netanyahu, despite having been slapped right in the face by many years of, I've been very critical of Israel as well, but they have been a good ally, and they are the only democracy, and we've been a good ally too. But I think for someone who just got a big slap in the face, I think he did as well as you could have. And I think this is something you actually said like about 6 months ago that sort of drew me into your show. We probably have never had a president so that gets beat up on foreign policy by like these dictators.
Yeah.
He can't even dance with them. And it's almost, it's embarrassing.
No, and he sat there and listened intently as if he were really, really, you know, absorbing in a lesson on Israeli history, the history of Israel. And I have to think he was just thinking, what the hell? I would suspect that he's most likely breaking out into a bit of a sweat, you know, being lectured to, because a guy like Barack Obama doesn't like to be spoken to that way. And it reminded a lot of people, and I thought this is a really good analogy. Now, the movie Love Actually, it's one of my favorite movies. It's not in the top 50, but it is a favorite of mine. And at the end, the president it comes to visit England, and the prime minister there, the president is behaving very arrogantly toward the English prime minister, and at the end of the movie, the British prime minister decides to call the president out, and he does so in spectacular fashion. And a lot of people made that analogy. A lot of people in the media made that analogy, and I thought it was pretty clever too. Yeah, it was really good.
I ask you because you've been in military service and you've also been injured in combat. Most of us have not. From a standpoint of a retired Marine, what do you think our policy towards as far as here's the issue regarding Israel? I think it's almost embarrassing sometimes to have Barack Obama as our spokesperson for foreign policy, because I mean he honestly knows a little bit more than me. And that's horrible.
Well, you know, when Barack Obama first came in office, he was being spoken to as this person who's come from on high, this genius, this brilliant man, this man who's above America, above it all. That he's this great genius, and you know. He proves more and more that he doesn't have a really good grasp on a lot of issues. And it's embarrassing because he's out of his depth as president of the United States. He's sort of getting it as he goes along. But in my opinion, you know, because I want to be fair, that he's catching on as things go along. But, you know, in my opinion, these times don't call for an on-the-job training. And I know that, you know, most presidents are on the job, and it's on the job training, but he doesn't have the gravitas, the experience, the weight it takes to be president of the United States. And clearly the mistakes he's made indicate that.
Mm-hmm. So if you were, let's do this. Let's put you in the seat next to Mr. Netanyahu. Where would you differ? As far as the starting point of this policy, the reason I'm kind of dwelling on this is because this issue could really change the election. This issue could almost really hurt Barack Obama. Maybe not shoot him down, but this could give him a sprained ankle.
Yeah. Well, where I would stand with Israel, if I were president of the United States, I'd stand with Israel first, and I would honestly go with what Jimmy Carter did when he was president, and he tackled this issue. Every president has had to deal with this issue since the formation of Israel, in terms of where they are right now. And I think Carter pretty much had it right, even though there was no real success there. He got the two leaders together at Camp David, kept them all weekend, and for the most part, he let them work out whatever deal they were going to make together on their own, while he pretty much, you know, hung around outside the door, if you will. And they got nothing done, and it frustrated Carter a great deal. And And finally, Carter entered the room and said, "Hey, you guys aren't leaving until we get something done here, you know." And they did. You know, it was tentative, and it didn't last for very long, but they did. And I think I would handle it the same way. You know, I'm certainly by no means a Carter, you know, apologist or fan, but I think he did it the right way. And instead of making suggestions or saying that, yeah, I believe that Israel should do this and that the Palestinians should do that, as if, you know, I know anything about that history and that struggle, you know, just let the two parties work it out on their own, because it's their countries are at stake. It's the people that live with them, that live in that region, that are really the ones who will benefit from that. And an American president, you know, unless he's an Israeli who's lived in Israel, is way out of his depth in making suggestions about how those two leaders should do their jobs.
I do like that part about what you said about President Carter, where he basically said, "Look, you're not going anywhere. You're making a deal." Well, my question is, all right, I should have just asked you this from the start. I tend to think Barack Obama actually is siding with terrorists. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
I mean,
no, you're absolutely right. The Palestinians, easy for me to say, the Palestinians. There we go. Are infiltrated by Hamas. Hamas is more or less running the show, and they have proven to be, over time and time again, to be a terrorist organization. They've carried out numerous terrorist acts across the region, and it's unfortunate that the Obama administration wants to fund the Palestinians, which will in turn fund Hamas, and we would wind up funding a terrorist organization, and it's bizarre.
My main concern is that if indeed this organization has a major impact or an input on the Palestinians, let's face it, the people are the victims, the tent city.
Mm-hmm.
But if indeed they have control over the government, I mean, indeed they made their mark by killing Americans.
Yeah.
And I mean, that almost, I guess what I'm trying to say, and school me here if I'm wrong, basically Hamas took responsibility for an awful lot of killing of U.S. soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And now, basically, we're saying, we're agreeing with what they're saying as far as the starting point. Even after 40 or 45 years of owning these land rights, we should start. Israel should give them up, and that should be the starting point.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think that, as you pointed out, that this whole issue is going to affect the 2012 elections, and that Barack Obama has really walked a fine line here. He's opened up his mouth before engaging his brain far too many times, and it was bound to come back and really bite him. I mean, he's pretty much been Teflon, you know, to this point, where he's gotten away with saying really stupid things, and nobody's really called him on it. But this is an issue that that a lot of people are very sensitive about. Now, America's mood is at the lowest level in 2 years. You know, and polls show this all over America. You know, Americans are more pessimistic about the nation's economic outlook and the overall direction that the country's going in. And President Obama's first 2 years in office, when the country, you know, just before, when the country was still officially ensnared in the Great Recession, according to New York Times and CBS poll, rising gas prices, stubborn unemployment, and this debate in Washington, this vitriol, which is a word I have to admit I never knew until this guy became president of the United States. Isn't that something? Barack Obama becomes president, and I learned the meaning of the word vitriol. I'd never used that word in my entire life, Mike, and I'd never heard it my entire 49 years on this planet. Have you ever heard the word vitriol before? Do you know what it means to engage in vitriol? Mike? Oh, God. Mike probably had to go and look that word up like I did. Yeah, vitriol. What is that all about? All right. So it got me to thinking when I heard about this poll when I earlier today. What is it that has gone so wrong with this administration and with America, where America's mood about the country has gotten so bad, where America, most Americans feel like we're on the wrong track. And so I started to do some research, and I got to where I wanted to know, well, what is the result? What is the result of all this? Are you there, Mike? Nope, Mike's not here yet.
No, I'm
yet.
Here.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm here. I just mute my mic so you don't get any background noise.
Oh, okay. That's okay. I wanted to know if you'd heard the word vitriol before this administration took office, because I'd never heard it before.
Oh, I must have had my mic muted, but no, I Googled it, I Binged it,
yeah.
And I Yahooed it.
Yeah.
No one, everything went back to the president, but there was no dictionary or encyclopedia type definition.
Vitriol.
I was thinking maybe it was Ebonics.
Yeah. All right, hold on, Mike. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. And for those of you who are on a budget and who isn't, the toll-free number is 877-666. Not my idea, 9305. So I wanted to go ahead and try to gauge how did this all start and when did it all start. So I wanted to find out who started. First, my first question to myself was earlier today, who started the Tea Party movement? Who really started it? And so I did some research, which is part of my job to do. And so what I really want to know is who started it? Where did it start? Where it's the beginning? So here's how the Tea Party actually started, the beginning of the Tea Party. It wasn't Sarah Palin. It wasn't my guy Ron Paul either. And it wasn't the Republicans, although socialist Democrats would have you believe that there's some sort of GOP conspiracy there. It wasn't Fox News, fair and balanced. And it wasn't even Alex Jones, whom I sometimes admire. No, it wasn't any of those folks. It seems that these days there are a lot of people claiming to be the first to have started the Tea Party movement. And I'll tell you right now, that none of those people or organizations had anything to do with the starting of the Tea Party movement. I did my homework. Now, I give credit to people like Ron Paul and Alex Jones as being major leaders in the Patriot and Tea Party movement. But there's no way those movements would be what they are today without Ron Paul and Alex Jones and folks like them, or even Fox News. But now, if you want to get real specific, the Tea Party movement was actually started by those great patriots who lived in Boston, Massachusetts in December 16, 1773. But that's going way back. But we're going to focus on this particular modern movement and where it actually stems from. For decades, since the original Tea Party patriots, there's been talk that from the Boston Tea Party, that some people may even have pondered over mailing tea bags to our congressmen and senators. But this current Tea Party movement can be traced back to one single person's post. One single person. And this is where we start talking about one person can make a difference. One person truly can make a difference. And here's how it all went down. I'm going to go ahead and play this clip, Mike, and then you jump in here if you have anything to say.
I'm fine listening, Doc. I'm fine listening.
949, you're on with the C. Robert Jones and Cool Mike conservative radio program, Cool Mike being the guest co-host.
Hello. How are
hey.
You guys?
Good.
This is Deborah.
How are you?
Hey, Deborah.
Cool Mike.
Yeah, I am doing well, Dr. Jones. This is Deborah from one half of the O'Mamas.
This is the Republican half of the O'Mamas.
Yes.
I'm just one opinionated mom out there. There are a lot of us, but
sounds good.
I
glad to have you.
I happen to be the Republican half of the opinionated mamas. And interesting commentary about the Tea Party. I want to hear more about it, because I thought it was kind of started as, you know, it was as a grassroots thing. But I think it kind of eventually got a little bit of money behind it, which is why it's carried so far. But I want to hear your what you say, how it got started.
Yeah, it started with a single person's post on one single thread on one single forum. And I'm about to go ahead and give you the proof here. We're going to play this clip about how it started, and then we'll go ahead and get some background in there.
Here. This just in, we've got breaking news on the White House North Lawn, which was evacuated just moments ago because of tea bags being thrown over the fence. You can now see a robot picking those tea bags up. If you look really closely, there are these tea bags protests. You don't see it?
No.
Come on, Contessa, you've got good eyes.
No, I don't. And I've said before, I need glasses. I know I need glasses, but where are we looking here? That's the thing in the middle.
You see it?
Yeah, it kind of blends in.
Right there, it kind of blends in, but that's the beauty of robots.
They blend in with the fence.
But remember, this was serious business because they evacuated the White House North Lawn. In fact, our own Mike Vaccara had to leave the scene here.
Anything that gets tossed in is a suspicious item, even if it's tea bags.
Even tea bags. We'll move on to other stuff.
Okay, we showed you breaking news from the White House a short time ago.
Tea Party participants threw a tea bag over the White House fence, causing a brief evacuation.
Thousands across the country are protesting tax policies, the bailout, and the growing deficit.
Now, tea parties that are being put on by Republican and conservative independent groups all across the country, FreedomWorks.com org claims they are in every state.
NBC Hampton Pearson joins us from Washington, D.C. now. And the million tea bag march, so did they get a million people?
Well, that's going to remain to be seen in terms of who's doing the counting and who's keeping score as the day plays itself out. Most of my attention has been focused, as you just mentioned, on what happened at the White House, where we did have that brief flurry of activity when apparently someone tossed a box of tea bags over the fence onto the White House lawn. That, of course, prompted a scurry of activity by security folks. The area directly in front of the White House briefly cordoned off. They brought out one of those robotic-like devices that's almost used automatically these days to examine any kind of suspicious package. And let's say the collateral damage for a brief period of time, those North Lawn TV camera positions were evacuated. But meanwhile, across the street in Lafayette Park, for a couple hours, the rain-soaked Washington version of those Tea Party-like rallies, one of more than 300 events in all 50 states around the country, wasn't staged there. People who claim they are, quote, taxed enough already, the T acronym, if you will. They frankly found out it's a lot easier to organize in cyberspace than on the ground. They lost their permit for what was to be their symbolic tea dumping ceremony close to the White House today.
All right. So a group of folks got together and they decided they were going to show their displeasure with the government taxing and spending and taxing without representation and all that. Mike, you remember that event when that all occurred?
That's a great piece, and that's a great moment. I mean, that is honestly people who know history and people who are fed up. And that is a perfect example of these people took their own time. They migrated there, and here is their response. Those people are true patriots, at least in my opinion.
All right, back in
everyone's opinion, they should be. What do you mean, just my opinion?
Exactly. Now, back on the 23rd of January 2009, I received an email from a friend of mine, John, at pioneerliving.net. Check out the site. Saying that we should do exactly this: go out and mail tea bags to the White House, to the president, addressed to the White House, or go out and toss them over the fence, that kind of thing. So I got the email, and I wasn't available at the time to participate, but I did support the effort. Now, the email said to mail our tea bags to Obama before he takes his seat in the West Wing. And of course, I was all for it. But I didn't have anything really to do with it. I just received the email. I just want to make sure everybody knows that. I'm not claiming this to have started the Tea Party movement. This is an email that I got. All right? So...
You're
sounding
like Al Gore a little bit. Sorry.
No. I'm just reading.
I'm almost starting that rumor after the show. You guys know Doc Stone started the Tea Party?
No. I received an email like thousands and thousands of other people. I didn't even participate. I just read the email and I was all for it. That's why I just wanted to clear that up. Well, one thing I did notice was that the person who sent the email failed to include the White House address. And so that's why a lot of people wound up just going who were in the area just going to the White House and dumping the stuff over the fence. So I wanted to just clear that, give you a little background as to why folks were tossing the tea bags over the fence was because a lot of people didn't actually have the address in the email and they didn't even feel like looking it up. They just went ahead and went to the White House and started chucking stuff over the fence. So
Michelle, what did it take?
Was John from pioneerliving.net the originator? A lot of people think that he was because he made the suggestion that folks should mail in the tea bags and then folks were going to mail them in, but they were going to go ahead and chuck them over the fence too, and that's how it all started. So was he the originator of the first thread? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So.
Wow.
But no. As much as I'd like to give him credit for being the originator of the idea, I can't. He and his wife certainly were amongst the very first few that made this all happen. And it might not even be anything close to what it is today had they not jumped on it. As a matter of fact, it might not have even happened at all. They worked tirelessly sending out hundreds and hundreds of emails trying to get others to do the same thing. They emailed a lot of folks. They even emailed Alex Jones and Ron Paul and a lot of folks like that to try to get them to get this whole thing going. And so the Tea Party, it can be said that pioneerliving.net, John at the Pioneer Living had really been like the godfather of the Tea Party. But this is where it all got started. Who started it all? Here it comes, drum roll. The person who did that post, the one goes by the username GMAC. No, that's anticlimactic. Anybody? January 19th, 2009, an article with the title, Mail a Tea Bag to Congress and Senate. Yes, GMAC. The username GMAC. He posted an email thread and stating that folks should mail their tea bags to Congress and Senate. He posted the idea in a government forum, and he was the moderator of the forum. And now, prior to that thread being started, and during and after, there are other threads where people are discussing protests, what type of protest they want to do, how they want to conduct the protest, and it was there was a consensus between GMAC and the folks on the government thread to go ahead and do this Tea Party thing where they'll mail the tea bags to Congress and Senate.
Well, what I kind of like about it from the beginning is that it was so simple. I mean, here we're seeing, you know, from my perspective, which is that of a mom. I mean, everything that works well is, you know, it seems to be the simplest. You know, the simplest solution. So as a simple mom, I think, why are billions of my tax dollars being spent on government programs? Why are we bailing the banks out? And so this would motivate me to get upset. And, you know, what's a very simple way that I can send a message to the government to say, oh, this is kind of making me angry. And I feel a little bit... you know, I think that was the origin of the movement was, even though, you know, we know that it's kind of an astroturf and not a grassroots movement now that it's, you know, 3 years later. But at the time, I think, you know, you have to put it in context of the time. People were upset that all of this money was being spent. Nobody knew where it all went. Nobody, you know, understood what was going on with this big economic meltdown. And so something really simple. I mean, how American is that? Something as simple as to mail a tea bag or throw a tea bag. You know, I mean, that's just kind of encapsulates the American spirit. It's not violent. It's not anything big and huge. It's just one of those little symbols that says, hey, we're pretty upset, and we want something done, and, you know, we want to see action. We want to know what's going on, and what are you guys going to do about it? Because here we are, and we're doing our little bit. You know, we want some common sense solution to this problem. So what are you guys going to do, you big guys in Washington? How are you going to fix it?
That's exactly right. Now, here we go. I went ahead and posted the threads that I mentioned, the forums and the threads, and these are where the origins of where the actual Tea Party first began, the idea for the Tea Party movement. And they're posted there, and I have the rest of the articles and the rest of the links to substantiate what I just told you right here. If anybody wants them, I'll go ahead and put them up there. Okay. Somebody
sounds
wrote.
Tired. Are you tired?
No. I'm sighing in disbelief at this private message I just got, and it's not private. It's also posted in the page here, in the chat room. It says, "C. Robert Jones, how can you, as a man of color, we're all colored something." Well, but never mind. A man of color vote against the president, you're obligated to him without question.
Oh,
ouch.
Wow.
Without question.
So in other words, marching orders.
Yeah, which
that's
is
why it's kind of racist to me. I mean, I don't know
how I'm obligated to him without color, but that certainly is a fine segue into our next topic, the Oath Keepers. Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's a great plan. I mean, I didn't even plan that. We have another caller on the line, 208-476. You're on with the C. Robert Jones and Cool Mike Conservative Radio Show. Cool Mike being the guest co-host for today. Caller?
Hi, Dr. Jones. It's Karen.
Hey,
I'm
here
in Idaho.
All right. Karen's in Idaho, and she, don't laugh, she puts.
Are you
going to
make fun of me now?
She puts backpacks on goats and marches them through the woods.
Well, that's no different than, I mean, you put them on horses and donkeys. What's the difference?
Well, yeah, I said that too.
Dr. Jones had never heard of that before.
No, I hadn't. All right. So I vote Obama 2012 says that I need to retract my statement. I'm not obligated to the President of the United States to follow him without question. I'm not obligated to do that with anyone. If it has anything to do with the military, I'm a retired Marine, and so I am not obligated to follow the president. But it's a great segue into what I'm about to discuss right now. You know, a lot of organizations have sprung up as a result of President Obama's tax and spend and all the things that he's doing that sort of fly against the Constitution. There are a group of people out there, not just those crazy militia folks who hang out in the woods and herd goats with packs on
them.
Not just those folks, but really true American patriots who don't want to overthrow the government. They don't want the government to, you know, they're not running around with weapons and, you know, running through the woods and, you know, practicing ways of overthrowing the government. These are just your average American citizens who happen to be in positions of authority, like police officers, first responders, firemen, former military personnel and current military personnel, who believe that this government has overreached such to the extent where there needs to be a cohesive unit of those of us who have a certain expertise to, well, I'll go ahead and let Stuart Rose explain it. He can explain it better than I'm doing right now. So we'll go ahead and get into that, and then I'll take some questions from callers. Here we go.
My name is Stuart Rhodes. I'm the founder of Oath Keepers. We all are Americans. We all share a common ground of our Declaration and our Constitution, and in particular our Bill of Rights. That's our common ground. Our mission is simply to use the First Amendment to reach out and remind all active duty military, police, and firefighters of their civic obligation, of their legal duty and responsibilities under Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution. The oath is not a good idea or some tradition that we just do. It's a requirement. It's a legal requirement. So our mission is simply to remind them of that oath, of the fact that it is to the law. The oath is to the highest law of the land. In this country, the Constitution reigns, not some man or woman. It's not an oath to an individual. Now, the founders were no dummies. They did this for a good reason. Throughout history, the oath was to the king, because who owned the country? The king owned the country, right? Divine right of kings. So, of course, the oath was to a person. And even in modern times, even after the fall of monarchy, you had an oath to individuals. The oath in Nazi Germany was to the Führer. You know, the oath was there was, I swear to obey the Führer and give my life for the Führer. Now, why was that? Because in that country, in Nazi Germany, Hitler's word was law. He opened his mouth, law emanated. That's what a dictator is. He dictates just by talking. He opens his mouth, he becomes law. He is the law. He is the nation. So the oath is to him. In this country, in sharp contrast, the oath is to no man, to no woman, to no individual. Now, why is that? Because we live under the rule of law, not of men. That's what a republic is. And it's not a democracy. You look in the Constitution, you'll never see the word democracy used anywhere in there, nor in the Declaration of Independence. It's nowhere to be found. Yes, the government is established by the consent of the people, as the Declaration makes clear, deriving its just powers from their consent. But it's not majority rule. That's what a democracy is. Democracy is 51% get to tell the 49% what to do absolutely. No restraints on their power. No limitations. In such a system as that, as Madison pointed out, the minority, whether it be a racial minority, whether it be a cultural or religious minority, or a political minority, the minority is up a creek without a paddle, because the majority can reign over them and tyrannize over them at will in a real democracy. A real democracy is what put Socrates to death. They didn't like the way he was talking to the youth. They put him to death by a vote. That's what a democracy is. Or as some had said, a democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner. Okay? The minority will always fare worse of any kind in a democracy. That's why the founders set up a constitutional republic. Now, what that means is it's a republic in the sense of representatives and also in the sense of multiple sovereignties coming together, the multiple states. But even above them, when they send someone to Washington, D.C., as a representative, they don't go there and just do what they want. It's not a representative democracy. They don't just rule by majority rule. They pass legislation by majority rule. But what's higher than legislation? The Constitution. So the Constitution is the highest law of the land, not the will of Congress on any vote. If their rule, if their law that they pass is contrary to the Constitution, as the Supreme Court has said many times, it is null and void, as if never enacted in the first place. A law contrary to the Constitution is null and void, has no force of law. A law that violates freedom of speech, for example. A law that bans criticism of the president, for example, like the Alien and Seditious Acts. And that turmoil and anxiety over perceived domestic enemies aiding foreign enemies, like we have now, you had...
All right, let me go ahead and put that on pause so we can have a discussion about this. Now, the Alien and Sedition Act, when Stuart Rose, who happens to be a good friend of mine, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and drop that name. He's a good friend of mine. He's the one responsible for getting me involved in the Oath Keepers organization. When early on in Barack Obama's presidency, there was a lot of criticism about some of the things that he was doing that citizens and pundits felt were contrary to the Constitution. And there were a few black leaders out there, some people I've never heard of before, and then there are a few other folks in the media who were saying that to go against what the president wants to do is an act of sedition, and those folks should be punished as a result of behaving in a way that would incite sedition. And when that occurred, a lot of folks became concerned about the thought of criticizing a president, a sitting president, being an act of treason or sedition. And so a lot of these organizations sprung up as a result of this, and the Oath Keepers are one of those organizations. Any comments from my callers or my co-host about what you just heard there?
Well, since we have Karen on, why don't we she comment first?
Oh, thank you. We've talked so much about democracy, and I was wondering when the word republic was going to come up, because we are a republic representing the people. Now, the reason I called in was about the Oath Keepers. In the last 3 weeks, I've talked to people, and a friend of mine, she told me that her two sons who are in the military were asked privately if they would be willing to shoot their own people, meaning shoot on Americans. And both of her sons said, no, of course not. And then they had their contracts shortened, quote unquote. And I when I was in D.C. the first part of May, I met a girl at the airport, and she said her husband had his contract with the Air Force shortened by 2 weeks. And he was one of those guards for the president. I don't know, Dr. Jones, what they're called. He's the only one of 20 people in the world who can be close to the president with a loaded gun.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And
I think I can't remember the name.
Private guard or something. But he got his contract shortened. And I'm like, why would they shorten his contract after they spent so much money training him? And why were these other two young men had their contracts shortened? Is it because they've become patriotic and decided they're not going to follow orders if the orders are in violation of their oath? That's my question.
And that's a good question. It's hard to tell. I mean, one doesn't it's probably not it's not my nature to read anything untoward into certain situations like this, but it does stick in the mind, and it kind of gives you pause, and you wonder. But then, you know, you don't want to, you know, go too far out on a limb with that kind of thing without any actual proof. But I do believe that this administration has targeted individuals and organizations that seem to have a resistance to the administration's plans to target those individuals and marginalize them. So I do believe that's a possibility. It is a possibility. Of course it is. We have another call on the line. 843. You're on with C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report with guest host Cool Mike.
Yeah, what's up, Dyke? I'm sorry, Dyke. Doc. I'm fighting with I Vote Stupid on air. I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. I apologize.
I'm going to tell you, I don't know how many shows I've done a blog talk, but between you and Robert Jones, man, you guys, there's a real war going on here in that chat room. Jeez.
I'm glad I just had ghosts.
I am so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I've been called a lot of things, but that's the first time for that one.
Oh, God. And now I'm not going to say my name.
Oh, no. You go right ahead.
Oh, God. I'm laughing because I Vote Stupid, or I call him I Vote Stupid. I Vote Obama is threatening to call the police on me for free speech.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Hence, organizations like the Oath Keepers that have sprung up and are getting an awful lot of press these days, especially being featured at CPAC at some point, and the last CPAC event, and they've been making the news at an alarming rate these last couple of months as the president's popularity wanes. We know it was up to 60% just a couple of weeks ago, and now it's back down to the level it was before Bin Laden was knocked off. Any thoughts on these new movements?
Yeah. Well, have you catch this latest one, this new thing? It came out just a short while ago. Now, this is where your tax dollars are going, and this is just too funny. This is better than my oops. they have Jesse Lee. The Obama administration has appointed Jesse Lee. She will move from the new media department into the role in the communications department. This is the title: Dire Progressive Media Online Response. You catch that one?
Yeah.
Into the Department of Dire Progressive Media and Online Response. This is someone who's going to be out there to do all the propaganda and the negative media response. Who thinks up a name like this? Dire Media, not Dire Progressive Media and Online Response. Doesn't this sound like something came straight out of Stalin's communist, manifesto, departments, whatever?
Yeah, it
Another
does.
Commissar.
Exactly, and it brings to mind, it enhances the fear and the apprehension of the American public that the country is going in the wrong direction, and that this country is no longer the land of the free, although albeit still the home of the brave, but it just seems, Obama gets a lot of criticism for being a socialist, Marxist, and a lot of people are saying, are you kidding? How could this possibly be? No, he's not any of that. He's just it's astounding the way that this administration works, where they are slowly attempting to manipulate how we think in terms of Obama's policies that they need to somehow control how we think and then control the media. To the extent that the media is on Obama's side and gets out his message, and it's frightening the way that things are being carried out. And I had no idea that this was going on.
It's absolutely phenomenal. And when you start to think about the departments that he's instituted in the last 2 years, and you start looking at the names of them, how many of the departments have progressive or they'll say forward thinking. They're all these little code words, and it's purely another level of propaganda.
Well, I had a state representative, and he came up and down our street. And I live in a very good middle class neighborhood, but this guy, he ran. He's knocking on all the doors. There was like 9 houses in a row that when we had a neighborhood picnic, they said, "I really like this guy." Like 9 people simultaneously said, "He goes to our church." There were 9 different churches. Now Obama's claiming he's Irish.
Yeah, he is.
This is politics in its finest hour here.
Oh, he's a handshaker and a baby kisser, and he's Irish. He's black. He's white.
Maybe he is. But maybe, Doc, maybe he truly is Irish because he's got the blarney.
Yes. Well, that's
What's
exactly
blarney?
Right. 208, do you have anything to add to this this discussion of Barack Obama being Irish and Stalinist and Marxist and all that?
We 208, lost
are
someone?
You there? Karen.
Are you talking to me?
Oh, that's Karen.
Yes, Karen.
No, I put on our chat room that he's telling the Irish people that he's Irish now, and I think he's going after the Irish vote for that, with that comment.
Well, he's going to need to shore up his vote count now that he's pretty much lost, the Jewish vote in many areas. Folks are saying that he had a 3-point lead. He had a 3-point margin in Florida when he ran for president, and he won by a 3-point margin. And the pundits are saying that he's pretty much lost that. And it's going to be in even money in Florida in 2012, unless there's a dramatic change of events in policy. But it seems that Obama's losing a wealth of support as a result of his engaging his mouth before before his brain. Yeah. All right. So let me go ahead and get this caller in here. Caller 215. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report with guest host Cool Mike.
Yeah, I just want to make the comment about when the president made this comment about he was Irish, and you mentioned his great great grandfather that was Irish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a black person, and that comment. Basically should indicate to black people that he does not identify himself as being black. I mean, he is basically what you would call like a mixed race person. He is not black. And because the majority of black people are not able to go back and identify a great-great-grandfather who happens to be Irish, if black people have any mixed racial ancestry, it's because that was forced upon them during the time of slavery, so that they can't trace it back in their own family tree. So that's why, many black people were, completely fooled the first time and that they voted for him. I mean, he does not identify with the black community in America. So I think that if they really want to make a vote for a black president, they should probably vote for Herman Cain. He is more of a person who is actually from the black community.
Well, I think that Obama is chameleon-like. Where wherever he is, he's a member of that the particular race of people, or he agrees with the particular group of people he's with at the time. He is the only president. I'm the only person I know who is not from Pakistan who pronounces Pakistan Pakistan. He is the only. I was speaking with a Pakistani guy earlier today. In fact, he's my doctor. He doesn't pronounce Pakistan Pakistan. And I asked him today. I was just goofing with him, and I said, "Hey, would you please pronounce Pakistan for me?" And he pronounced it exactly the way I did. But Obama seems to, he gets to a place where he wants to, he believes that he's this academic who's above it all, and so he wants to sort of chameleon himself into a situation. He said so many times that he attempts to adapt the way he speaks and his mannerisms. He tailors them to his audience at the time. So if he is speaking to a Mexican audience or a Latin audience, he'll sort of speak in sort of a Latin-y kind of parlance with an accent. I don't know if anybody's noticed that at all, but when he's speaking to a particular type of organization or group of people, he will tailor the way he speaks, his mannerisms, his diction, word inflection, and they'll be tailored to that specific group of people. And so no surprise that he is Irish today. None whatsoever, because if he's in Spain tomorrow, he'll be Spanish. No surprise at all.
I think he was trying to emphasize his racial ancestry, but the only point I was trying to make is that he claims he's the first black American president, but the majority of black Americans are not able to trace their racial ancestry the same way he can, because they don't come from a mixed racial ancestry. And,
yeah.
So, therefore, you know, for him to get the black vote after these types of comments, I mean, like, the majority of black people, they must not be paying attention to what these comments are.
Well, I mean, you had, and I'll go ahead and say leaders, for lack of a better word. You had African-American leaders who were pointing that out, and then they were being taken to task for doing so, that Barack Obama is not the first black this or black that. And, you know, I honestly, citizen, I don't really care. I mean, he'll say he's black when he needs to be black. He'll say he has white parents when he needs to do that. He'll say that he's Irish when he needs to do that. Honestly, can I be honest with you right now, everybody? I do the same thing. My mother's Hispanic, and when I'm looking, I'm watching the news, and I'll see some black person who can barely speak English, you know, telling me that the nephew just got shot and they've got rollers in their hair and looking all wild and crazy. I'm Hispanic right then and there. I'm not black the rest of the day, I can say that I am because my mom's Hispanic, and hey, on my dad's side, we got some Irish folks in there. So when it's time to be Irish, I'm Irish too, and I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. But what I do have a problem with is when the guy is just completely and utterly dishonest, and he uses what I do as a joke to his advantage politically, and I just feel that that's really just severely disingenuous of him. And I think, if he does it in jest, it's okay. But if he's doing it to curry favor with a particular group or organization in order to get to enact some political policy, I think it's completely inappropriate.
Yeah.
Well, he just continues the tradition. I honestly, I think we should ask everyone in here, what is, I mean, one thing that you like about President Obama? Just one thing. Because I am not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat. But growing up, I have voted very conservative, so I obviously voted for many more. I've only voted for two Democrats in my life, because obviously one evil is less than the other. But I honestly can't think of one thing. I don't know. Normally, there's at least one thing about a president. Like, I didn't care much for Bill Clinton, but there were things about Bill Clinton. He was a smooth talker. But I can't think of anything. I'm, like, really scared about President Obama. I mean, he is almost like a younger version of what we hear from Arafat and the Hamas leader. In many ways, he's just a more schooled person. He's saying what they're saying. He's saying it in different manners.
Yeah, well, Barack Obama, he's this smooth guy, but he's not like Slick Willie, where, you know, there's a wink and a smile there, you know, where he knows he's full of crap and you know it and it's all good. It's not like that. I like to say that in the military. And Karen will attest to this, that if you are a really good liar, if you are one of the finest liars and you're known for it, you're known as being a liar of Clintonian proportions. And that's military wide. If you're a good liar, you'll be put in the Clinton lying category, Clintonian proportions. But Barack Obama, he's lying and he's saying really stupid stuff and nobody's laughing. And there's no wink. Yeah.
There's a difference, because you get a liar like Clinton, and he's a used car salesman.
Yeah.
You know you're being sold a bill of goods, and what the heck, you're going to buy it anyway. But what you're getting with Obama is you're getting a bill of goods, and somehow or other, when you do that, you're checking your pockets to make sure your wallet is still there.
Yeah.
That's the difference. I mean,
yeah.
At one, you don't mind being taken, because you know what, hey, listen, it's done. It's. I'm sorry, Karen. What were you saying? I'm sorry, I stepped on you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that my mic was on.
Oh, what's going on over there, Karen?
Martin, for his making fun of me.
Now, Karen is a good friend of mine. We met in D.C. a while back, and she is formerly married to a Marine Master Gunnery Sergeant. She was married for how long, Karen?
23 years.
23 years to a Marine. I mean, she deserves all the medals that you can get for being a military.
Bless you, Karen, because I managed 10 years with the gunny.
Oh, bless you.
Hey, but then again, I decided on superior firepower to his.
Oh.
And Mike knows what I'm talking about because I'm retired New York City, and I decided I wanted superior firepower.
That's right.
Josh Jones, right. Man, you meeting some shady women around this country, boy.
You got a couple of
Pesco-Pasco
mama.
I know all about superior firepower.
Oh my God! I tell you what, we were having dinner in downtown DC, and I was sitting next to one of Karen's friends, and she was talking about the fact that she goes hunting a lot, and that she made a table out of his feet. She said she made a table out of his legs. And she took his legs and I guess she stuffed them or whatever, and then she put a tabletop over them. She got the elk's feet.
Now if that table started walking, I'd be really scared.
Oh my God, she told me. And what about the fish that she said she has? You got to hit over the head with a baseball bat. I mean, these folks
steelhead.
Were great. Yeah, steelhead. She said in order to get the steelhead, you know, you get them in the boat or whatever, and you got to smack them over the head with a baseball bat in order to.
Karen, have you run across those the ones that they found in the lakes here in North and South Carolina, the ones that that came from, I think, China or something like that, that jump into your boat?
Oh, my goodness, no. No.
Oh, my.
We have sturgeon here, though, that used to be like 10 feet long, but they aren't that big anymore. They come up from the ocean.
I was accustomed to fishing up in New York, and since I've been down here in South Carolina, I haven't had as much opportunity to fish. But I've done a lot of crabbing down here, and oh my goodness, the stone crabs! Oh God, are they delicious?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I'm coming to your house for dinner, okay? So go crabbing and call me.
Well, actually, I found out that I'm a better southern cook than I am than anything else. Well, actually, I'm a pretty damn good cook anyway. But I caught on to greens and pickling and everything else. And, oh, man, if I don't keep my cupboard stocked, people get, where's the next jar?
Yeah. That's exactly
especially
right.
Especially with jams and stuff. Oh, man.
Yeah, just don't put
gold on
the menu.
Yeah.
All right. We need to do a cooking show and a goat herding. No, not goat herding. The goat backpacking and the steelhead hammering with the baseball bat show. Because, I mean, I tell you what, it was really.
Pistol packing mamas.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes, yes.
That should be a good show. Pistol packing mamas. Here's a
there
thought.
You go.
I like it. Karen and you and
Annie. Go ahead
and
say
Annie, and then the lady your friend whose name I forgot, Karen, who has the legs of the
oh,
elk.
Oh, that was Susie.
Susie, yes.
Susie,
well,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting lady.
I never
put
had,
that up on NRA magazine.
Heard it's really good. Elk and caribou. I've always looked for it at restaurants, but I've never found it.
Yeah. Well, you can find his legs over at. Susie's house.
Hey, well, I told you about the gun rack.
Yeah, yeah. Now, those are made out of the antlers.
No, the feet.
Oh, the feet. Oh, okay. Do they have, are they called feet or hooves? I mean, because I'm a gun of feet. All right.
Now, that's kind of cold. You make a gun rack out of the very thing that killed the poor animal.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cold.
That's a redneck thing, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't have
now,
one of those.
Now, she's wearing a red checkered shirt right now. I'm going to die.
No, I'm not. But I don't have a gun rack like that, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we were talking about the Oath Keepers and being the first responders, former police, military, active duty military, not just former police officers, but current police officers across the country. I don't know what the numbers are right now. I didn't pull those up. I should have. But this organization has garnered national media attention over the last couple of months. I am a member of the Oath Keepers. I put the link up on the in the chat room. I don't know. Have you heard of this this organization, Southern?
No, I have. A couple of years ago, actually, when it first came out, I believe it was I first saw it 2 years ago up on the internet, and that was about the time I was starting the Tea Party here in Beaufort, South Carolina. And I signed on to it because being a retired New York City police officer. Yeah, the first thing you do when you sign in and become a police officer, you swear an oath to the Constitution of the United States, and for me it was the state of New York and the city of New York. So, yes, I was sworn to uphold the Constitution. You go into any office and you're elected official, you are sworn to the Constitution first before anything else. So it shouldn't be just law enforcement or military. It should be every single elected official that should be forced to support the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah. And the oath goes,
I'm getting a little upset here.
yeah, and I agree. I couldn't agree more. The oath is the oath. I can recite the oath by heart. I mean, I know it. But I'm going to go ahead and read it for those of you who've never really heard it. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me, according to regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so help me God. Now, there is a second oath for officers. That's enlisted folks. The officer's oath is just slightly different. I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies foreign and domestic, and that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take the obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me God. I have the distinction of taking both oaths as I enlisted in the military as a private and then became an officer later on. And both offices, both oaths are valid for the length of not just the length of your stay in the military, but overall. And they should be. You know,
I thought those oaths were for life, because when you make an oath, the oath is for life, isn't it?
Well,
not
you
just your term of service, but for life.
Well, all right,
so we have an oath keeper in here besides me, which is Liberty Sun. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Karen. You were saying?
I'm sorry, Dr. Jones. You can renounce an oath, but it's a conscious decision that you have to make, and like I could renounce my U.S. citizenship if I wanted to, but it's something you have to verbalize to the proper authorities. And I would think the oath is the same.
We have a new caller on the line, 772. Are you there? You're on with the
right
C.
Here,
Robert.
Robert, how are you?
No, hey.
Right here, Robert. How are you?
Yeah,
this is Tesla.
Yeah. Hey, Tesla.
About time he finally showed up. Jesus, I was wondering where the heck you stuck your head in the sand.
Well, in order for Tesla to call in, you have to say something that piques his interest to the point where he wants to call in. So there's some certain buzzwords that you got to have ready, and which will prompt Tesla to say, "Wait a minute," and then.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
Robert, you're giving away my secrets.
Right.
Well, I just got caught in an enchilada, if that's a reason to motivate Tesla there.
Well, Tesla, I swear I'm not going to put the bikini on now.
Ooh. Okay.
Trust me, no one wants to give me a bikini.
Okay, well, I'm going to hang up now, Robert. That's it. No bikini, no talk.
No. Go ahead. What did we say here that prompted the call? What was the buzzword?
Well, the distinction was in the word oath taker. That's the phrase. Okay. And what I want to know is, and it wasn't clear to me really, and if it wasn't clear, what is the difference between the oath taken by an oath taker and the oath taken by those who enforce our laws? I mean, is there a difference, and why is there a difference? That's where I think there's some cloudiness.
I don't believe there is a difference. Does anybody else think there's a difference?
No, there's no difference. You swear an oath, you swear an oath. Whether or not you're swearing to the United States Constitution or to state constitution, you swore an oath, period.
Okay.
That's the way
then
I look at it.
Why the need? Well, okay, I understand that. Then why the need, Robert, for the group called Oath Takers?
Well, Oath Keepers. Oath Keepers.
Oath Keepers, I'm sorry. Why is there a need for them if the oath that law enforcement and other officials like them take is no different?
Well, because there's a concern that that the lines have been blurred where the oath is concerned, where there are some who have argued that the oath means that the person who has assumed the oath will follow the President of the United States and any order that he may give simply because he is the President. He's the convening authority. He's the President. And so the Oath Keepers, we disagree with that. The oath is not to the President of the United States of America, but to the Constitution. And
All right, okay,
Robert, let me try this one with Tesla, because it's not simply just turning around and explaining that the oath is not the oath to the executive office. Mm-hmm. The oath is to the Constitution. It's reaffirming, and that's the most important thing. It's reaffirming and solidifying that belief that the oath is to the Constitution, to the United States of America, not to an individual holding the office of president. And what it also is, it's reminding people that have taken the oath what that oath means. You have a lot of people that will turn around, put their hand up, and swear the oath to the Constitution of the United States and whatever else, and they'll go, yeah, blah, 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 blah. But we're turning around and telling them, this is what it means. This is what you just did. Hello, wake up to the fact that you made a pledge. Now we're going to hold you to that pledge. We're going to reaffirm it, but now we're also going to turn around and put our finger in your face and say, now you reaffirm it and you endorse it and you support it and support the Constitution.
Okay.
Well said.
I can understand that. And then, Robert, that begs the question, being an oath keeper, is there ever an order from the President of the United States that a military soldier is not obligated to follow? And you, with your experience, you should know that answer.
Well, we're obligated to follow all lawful orders. However, there are orders that are lawful that are not I'm drawing a blank here on the word I want to use, that are not moral.
In a gray area?
Yes, moral. Like, for example, if the President of the United States orders me to shoot and kill passers-by, and we're standing there, I'm not obligated to follow an order like that. If the President of the United
What gives you the ability to make that decision then? Where in your code of conduct or in the Constitution does it say that?
Now, well, the military code of conduct does state that we're obligated to follow all orders, all lawful orders. But there are orders that we're not obligated to follow if we believe that those orders are not if there's a moral ambiguity there. For example, if I'm a Marine officer and I tell one of my Marines to go and kill the civilian and snatch her baby, well, I'm a military officer and he's obligated to follow my orders, all my lawful orders, but not to do something like that. And he is obligated by his moral sense, his moral center, to not do that and tell me that he refuses. And he
yeah,
rightly
the
so.
Same, all right, the same thing exists right. in New York City Tesla. The same thing exists in New York City Police Department. It's in the patrol guide, and the patrol guide is a book that it has all the rules and regulations for everyone in New York City Police Department. It's our Bible. It's our code. And it is in there that it states it has to be a reasonable order. And that gives the officer the ability to make a determination whether or not this is a lawful, reasonable order. It mm-hmm. has to be lawful and it has to be reasonable. And if it doesn't pass that smell test, so in other words, if you're turning around and telling me to bust into this apartment knowing there's just a baby and a mother in that apartment that's defenseless, they're not drug dealers and not anything else, if you're telling me to break down that door, I know that's not a reasonable law order. I have the ability to say no. If you turn around and tell me to hit this guy over the head with my billy club, well, hello, you better give me a really good reason as to why I have to hit this guy over the head with the billy club. There are standards, and I think that's where we as oath keepers are able to maintain our ability to avow ourselves to the Constitution and to our state constitutions, but also be able to say, hey, listen, you have to understand there's certain parameters that we have the ability to walk within.
Yes, indeed.
Hey,
and
then let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, he's always coming up with another question. I love this.
No, I'd like to hear it as well.
I know. I love it. I love you. He always comes up with something else.
as you know, I'm not playing devil's advocate, but I'm asking analytical questions. Your code of conduct is based on a Judeo-Christian belief system in which all life is sacred. Now, and I don't think that argument can be escaped. However, I'm a Muslim in the United States Army. I've been assigned to war in Iraq. I've been told to shoot another Iraqi. Now, my moral code of conduct, my moral code, as you just described, says I cannot shoot another Muslim. No way. So I disobey your order, sir. What do I do?
Now you're comparing two different societies and two different
standards. No, I'm not. There are Muslims in the United States Army who adhere to their religion. Just look at Fort Hood. That is my moral code. I'm sorry. Robert just
Tesler,
said it's my moral code. I'm uncomfortable with this.
Tesler, ask yourself this question. What is the difference between an ethical man and a moral man? An ethical man knows what's right. A moral man will not do what's wrong. And that's the difference. And you have to turn around and base it upon that. And you know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor. It has to come within our laws, our Constitution, as long as it falls within our laws and our Constitution, and within our Judeo-Christian belief, fine. I'm sorry. I have a lot of problems with some Muslim beliefs where a Muslim has the right to lie to a non-Muslim to make whatever point they want. I have problems with that. But this is something, mm-hmm. this is a new avenue we're dealing with, and we're going to have to figure out how to deal with that. This is something absolutely brand new.
Look, I agree with Robert's assessment. I understand that military code of conduct. I understand the issue of disobeying laws based upon, a violation of my moral beliefs. But I just gave an order as a lieutenant to a three-striper and told him to kill a Muslim. And that three-striper is a Muslim, and he cannot do that because of his profound religious beliefs. Now, based upon Robert's explanation, okay, this man should be allowed to disobey my orders. Am I correct?
Well, he is allowed to disobey the order if he believes it's an unjust order. But there's a process
right.
that has to be followed at that point, which is called a court-martial. And then he'll be asked to explain his belief and how it affects his ability to do his job. And I'm sure he'll be asked, why didn't this come up before? And
he said in his application for military ship that he was a Muslim. The United States government accepted him.
The United States government's smart.
Yeah. Oh, hold on. We have another caller on 111.
That's a Skype caller.
Skype caller.
Tesla, I love you anyway, baby.
You want to jump in here? Because you've been holding for a while.
Is this, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Mm-hmm. How's everything? I'm kind of confused. Is the topic loyalty oaths or is the topic Muslims? Because I could talk about all of them.
Well, no, the topic is the Oath Keepers and what it means to be an Oath Keeper. But then we're also talking about what the oath means. And, for example, the following a lawful order. And it's about, if we're giving a lawful order by the President of the United States or a member of the administration, and we believe that order is unjust, should we follow it? And so that hence the topic where Tesla brought up the example of following an order based on whether or not you believe the order is a just order or not.
Yeah, I think you're right. The process should be followed of the court martial. But he chooses not to obey the order. But I mean, the argument was, well, the military accepted him as he is. Well, he also volunteered to go into the military knowing that this was going to be a possibility. So, there's that end of it, too.
Bingo.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I found something curious when you were talking about loyalty oaths and whatnot. Full disclosure, my name is David Graham, and I've actually been in contact with you for the for coming on your show.
Yeah,
hi, David.
Hey.
David, it's Annie. How you doing, sweetie?
Hi, Annie.
Hi.
I interviewed Davey for his book. It's out called Stay Mad. It's an excellent book. Anyone that's a conservative has to buy his book. Then go to his website and buy Stay Mad by David Graham.
Up.
He's awesome.
Put the link up. I'm going to interview him too later this week.
Yeah.
People can go to Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio and click on his interview. Awesome book, and it's a link to his website to buy his book.
That was quite a
spirit. See, I'm still pumping you, baby.
Yeah,
well, that didn't come out right.
Well,
I am sticking my foot in my mouth.
By the way, hang on, everyone. At this point, somebody here in this chat room has an 18-year anniversary today. Am I not mistaken, Annie, you and your husband?
Oh, that was last night.
Well, last night, happy anniversary.
That was a little headache I paid for this morning.
18 years. Wow.
Well, that's my second marriage.
Congratulations.
18 years of what? Wait, 18 years of what? That hasn't been clarified.
Tesla, you're a little instigator today.
Hey,
yeah.
Listen,
ooh,
all my ashtrays are intact. I can say all the ashtrays in my household are intact. I can't say the same thing about Hillary.
Oh.
Ooh, ouch.
I'm not sure what that is. What's going on there?
Beyond me. I missed that one.
All
I
right.
remember Hillary Clinton throwing the ashtray at Bill. And the black guy he had when he went on camera.
I was going to contribute a point that I have in my book where I was studying the communism for my communism chapter, and I stumbled across a list of 45 stated goals for the communist takeover of the United States of America, and it's taken from a book from Cleon Skousen, The Naked Communist, and it was actually a topic in the in our House of Representatives on in 1963, January 10th. I got it all documented here. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about it. 45 goals that actually they'll blow your mind. But number 13 is to do away with all loyalty oaths, and that's what prompted my call.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually one of the communist goals. Along with right before it is resist any attempt to outlaw the Communist Party or capture one or both of the political parties in the United States.
Okay.
So there's a list of 45 of these things that you know, when you read them, you see, wow, that makes sense. Wow, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But the one that prompted me to call was the loyalty oath one.
Got it, got it. Hey, we have just 39 seconds left. The show is over after that point. Hey, let's get together and we can do my interview. I didn't know that Southern Sense had gotten to you first. Now I feel jilted.
The best always goes first.
Okay. All right. Hey, we'll get together after the show and talk about it. So we'll talk hopefully telephonically, we'll get things going from that point. Thank you all for calling. Thanks for being here. I really do appreciate it. You guys made this show easy and you made it great. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. And we'll talk later. The show is over. 2 seconds. We're done. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
All right.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta wash your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at His command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the down in the hole. You gotta help me keep the devil